This is a question that has vexed me for some time. And I don't still know the answer, but I'm going to tell you where I've got to so far, and you can maybe add as we go. So what we're going to do is briefly introduce the topic. And there's a bit of a surprising admission, I think. Then we'll think about, is it long? Then we'll think about, is it complicated? And then I'll make some suggestions about where we get to. So that's right. Good. And dive in whenever. Tell me where I'm wrong. So before we start, I guess it's worth calling out some assumptions I'm making. The first is that there's a God, and the second is that this God is interested in a written text and that Jesus rose from the dead. I guess they're fairly big fundamental assumptions. So I am viewing this question through the prism of people who believe, but I am then sort of stepping back and saying, well, let's say Jesus has risen to the dead and there's a God. Why has God chosen to communicate in this way in such a difficult book and such a long book? That's the question. So those things we're not going to prove tonight. I think there are good reasons for both of those, which won't surprise you, but that's not tonight's job. So the first thing is it actually long? And I've got a quiz question for you here. So on the right, you won't be surprised to know I work with numbers a lot. There's what's that? Eight different books there with the amount of words on the on, you can see from 1,200 to 1.5 million. Does anyone have a guess at which one the Bible is in that context? In the middle. That is a good fudged guess. Which one do you think?
578,000 words.
Oh, right. Okay. Anyone disagree? No.
Looking at what could be longer.
Well, that's a good question. Yeah.
War and Peace is longer.
War and Peace. Okay. Which one do you reckon is the shortest? Should get that one.
Leader article in the
Yeah.
newspaper.
Yeah. Next one. Well, maybe an average novel. How long do you think an average novel is on there?
Thousands of thousand words.
100,000 words, you guess. Yeah. I'll take you out of your misery. That's the answer. So the Quran is actually quite a short religious text. And interestingly, written in the same style all the way through the Quran. Quite an interesting feature of the Quran compared to the Bible. It's all in a fairly obvious sort of poetic style, even when it's recounting things like the account of Noah or the account of Abraham. It's quite written in poetry rather than in narrative in the main. The Bible's quite different, as we'll see. Yeah, so you've got kind of the Harry Potter series, which as a child I devoured and had no problem getting through as a 14, 15-year-old kid. I made my way through all of those, and it's longer than the Bible. And then if anyone has made it through Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the... Have you done that, Graham? Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire? Has anyone here read that? No.
No.
Tedious book. I'm sure someone has maybe given himself read it all. So I guess the point there is, yes, it is long, but it's not as long as some things that actually we probably wouldn't mind reading, something like a Harry Potter series or that sort of thing. Not far off from Lord of the Rings. If you wanted to read it all in one sitting, it would take 74 hours, which is not hideously long. If you think about it, 12 minutes a day is the sort of thing. I mean, when we in the Christian context have the reading planner, remember you do the New Testament twice and the Old Testament once. So like we're already reading that more than once a year, if that makes sense. So that I guess the sort of long bit is it is quite a long book. It's not on a page, it's not a tweet or a post online. It is much more than that, but it's not so long as to be kind of completely inaccessible to someone with a bit of time, I think it's fair to say. So that one's easy to answer, the kind of is it long? The next question is it complicated? And interestingly, the Bible kind of acknowledges that it is in places. So this is a passage that I'm sure quite a few have seen before. This is when Peter's writing. And he acknowledges that some of the letters of Paul are complicated. So Is it long? Kind of yes. Is it complicated? Well, kind of yes, on the Bible's own evidence. So count the patience of our Lord as salvation, just as our beloved brother Paul also wrote to you with the wisdom given to him, as he does in all his letters where he speaks in them of these matters. There are some things in them that are hard to understand, which the ignorant and unstable twist to their own destruction. So I guess my early, like, 5 minutes in conclusion is, yeah, it is pretty long. And yes, it has complicated bits. So the question is, why might a God communicate like that? All making sense so far. No one disagrees with me at this stage. Good. So let's just think about the length. And I think on this one, it is helpful to think of what the Bible actually is. It is quite different to, say, Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, which is all the same thing, just multiple books of the same thing, story. Gibbon, Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. I haven't read it all, but I assume it's largely historical narrative. That's what it's doing. The Bible's not that. It's actually more like a library, as is often called out. And you can tell it's different just by reading bits of it. If you did the kind of open a page, read a verse, and then open a page, read a different verse, it would often feel like a completely different book in a library. So this one, we love this in British culture. Love poetry. That's not our, like, natural home turf. My beloved speaks and says to me, "Arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away." That is very different to narrative history. Anyone know where that verse is? Now, in these days, when the disciples were increasing in number, a complaint by the Hellenists arose against the Hebrews. Very good. Very good. Okay, but you can tell just by playing these off against one another, if you didn't know the Bible and you're asked to read that one and then that one, you'd think they were from different books, and they kind of are. So that's the length is, it's not like it's all the same thing over and over again. Let's do it again. Anyone know the verse for this one? Okay.
Leviticus 4.
Leviticus 4. What verse, Andrew? Come on.
19.
19. Terrible guess. Need to know your Bibles better. This is ancient legislation, isn't it? Or more, not maybe legislation is the wrong term, but like law codes, like instructions on religious practices. Yeah. What about this verse? Bit further on, verse 10, I think. Well, no, it's one, it's one. You're right. My bad, you're right. So you can see the difference of thing again is that if you they're very dissimilar. So the point I guess I'm making, and I think this is a really nice vision if you haven't seen it before, is a sort of periodic table-esque picture of the Bible. So, you know, in the periodic table, the different types of elements are colored in different things. They've done this to kind of illustrate it's different genres. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which I was thinking about all this morning, they're a type of kind of biography, if you like, of Jesus. But again, they all function in slightly different ways, very different to prophetic literature in the green. So I guess I think that does help us think about the length question. Yes, the Bible is long, as if you think of it as a book in itself, but it is made up of lots of little bits that all feel quite different. And actually, within that, many of those books are quite short. Philemon takes 3 minutes to read. Okay, so that isn't long. Third John takes 2 minutes to read. Now, the Psalms, the whole of the Psalms would take you 4 hours, but most books are what? Even if you read the whole of the book, a couple of hours max. And that's probably a lot shorter than most books that we would read today. If you read a novel, I don't know, it would take 10 hours, 8 hours, something like that, I would think, if not more. So I think the long claim about the Bible is long as a whole corpus, but the little bits aren't quite so long, and they're all different. And then the last thing I would say is that longest book, this one here, this is Psalm, probably can't read that back. It's 4 hours, 50 minutes it takes to read. Even that isn't a book in a way, it's kind of an anthology. So this is, I don't know what stage you're at education wise. You doing poems yet? Probably not. Good on you. But basically, like I did at school, like most people do, you do an anthology of poetry as you go through. And again, it's the same thing. And the Psalms are a bit like that. So even the Psalms, the longest book, is actually 150 individual items, or maybe less. You see the point I'm making. And I think the Bible is very comfortable with the idea that it's not one thing happening over and over again. Hebrews 1, long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. So the Bible kind of acknowledges that this long book is actually lots of little books, and it's communicated it in different ways. And that's a feature of the library that is the Bible. And then the last, I think this is the last one I've got on the long bit. The other thing to kind of acknowledge is if we wound back 4,000 years, the Bible that then existed probably wasn't as long, like it's grown. So in 2 Chronicles 34, when one of the kings is reading the words of the law, they're probably just reading a section of the law, maybe Deuteronomy or something like that. And that's what they had then in written form. In the time of Jesus, they had a bigger Bible, if you like. They wouldn't have called it that. And now we've got even bigger. So the point, I guess, is it has got a lot. It's long now, but it's kind of got longer over time, if you like. And I think that's a helpful way of thinking about the length of the Bible. So hopefully what you've seen there is it's a library. We all know that anyway, but I think it's helpful to see it. Lots of those little bits are quite short bits to read, but combined together, of course, it is a lengthy book. So let's unpick, maybe for the next 5 minutes or so, the concept of the Bible being complicated. Who would agree that the Bible is complicated? Put your hands up. Good. In parts. In parts. So I think there is parts of the Bible that are complicated. So here's a good example that on face value reading, you go, whoa, what's going on here? So Jesus says, you know me and you know where I come from. And then he says, you do not know where I come from. Okay. That feels like a contradiction in terms. Okay. I'm not going to try and explain that one, but that initially you're like, oh, what's going on here? This verse, very odd. To most people, a dragon, like the earth helping a woman swallowing the river that a dragon had brought, like that is mental. Like it feels, when you read it, very, very odd, particularly to a Western mind. And there are plenty more verses where that comes from. What about this one? So I don't imagine many of you could pinpoint on a map any of those places. Maybe some of you could, but Heshbon, Eleale, Jahaz, Zoar, Horonaim, Eglath Shelishiah, and Nimrim. Like those places are not, like, if you, I mean, no, if you went down the street and read that verse out to people, they wouldn't have a scoobie what you're talking about. And probably I don't either, if I'm honest. What about this verse? Children of Esau's wife, and their, like, the fact that they were a chief. So I'm teasing out here that it's not like reading that verse, you can kind of read it, but it's not easy. That doesn't immediately go, okay, I know exactly what I need to do as a follower of Jesus by reading that verse. It is complicated on some level. But not all of the Bible is complicated, which I think was the point that was being flagged down here.
Even the complicated bits, it's not complicated like some maths is
True.
complicated or
Yeah.
physics or one of those subjects.
That is true.
You can read the words, it's knowing what they mean. It's
Yes.
hard.
Yeah, I guess the only bit I would say possibly could be seen as complicated is like a list of names that you don't really understand and recognize. But it's not complicated in the sense that a scientific textbook would be. Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. But there is lots of the Bible that actually, and I think this is the point you're driving at here, Andrew, which is actually, it's quite easy to read, and actually it's often very relatable. A father loves a son more than any of his sons, because he was the son he had when he's old, and he gave him a robe of many colours. That makes lots of sense. And actually, the narrative kind of it talks to human beings in a very real way. And you get family dynamics. You're like, oh, this makes a bit of sense. One of the most intriguing features, I'd say, of the Christian texts over almost any other religious text is how much they are talking about people and character development. So I think it's only the Hindu texts where you get a bit of that, Rama and Sita and so on. But a lot of the other religious texts, you don't see anything like the character development of people and the flaws of people being as described as they are in the Bible. So it is a kind of interesting book in that this bit isn't complicated and it's quite interesting about characters and people and how they work. It tells amazing stories like David and Goliath as well. And even the poetic verses, there are some bits of poetry which are hard to kind of grasp what's going on. There's a lot which it kind of makes sense. Like this is a psalmist saying to God, with my whole heart I seek you, let me not wander from your commandments. It kind of makes sense. It's a plea to help him with his faith on some level. So I guess I do think there is this sort of tension is the wrong word, but you have got complicated bits, maybe not academically complicated, but not easy to understand bits, and bits that are very easy to understand and maybe quite intriguing. Another example from the teaching of Jesus there. So I guess if we allow for that, the question then is like, it can it be comprehended? Like, can you take verses like this one and make any sense of it? Or is it so incomprehensible as to be inaccessible? And I think the answer is actually you can make a good way of understanding, because it's a library and that periodic table visual is quite good there. You kind of work out if it's poetry, it's probably going to be conforming to some different rules of literature than, say, history. It will be doing different things. We can do stuff around context to work out what it might be talking about in that sort of broader, maybe historical context, or the reason that book's been written or that letter's been written. Take a letter of Paul, some quite complicated bits in the letter of Paul. Take 1 Corinthians 11, the head covering passage, for example. Complicated text, difficult to understand, but you kind of know what's going on because you've got the frame of he's writing a letter back to a group of people who've asked him loads of questions. They're not quite sure how to live in a Christian setting. It doesn't mean that it's easy to understand, but you've got the frame of context to explain it. And then the third, I think, is important that sometimes we can come to the Bible as Western modern readers and expect it to do things it simply will never do. And that will often trip us up. And so that like expectation setting is probably a really important thing, that when you come to an ancient document, you probably can't expect it to function like the times. It often won't. And then the other thing is, it's not like in other books, we're not used to kind of this concept of kind of tension to draw something out. Think of the Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Contradiction. Well, for sure, but there's something going on. And contradictions are actually quite powerful tools to tease out something else that's going on, as seen in Dickens. So I think the point I guess I'm making here is, yes, it is complicated, but it is not so complicated as to be completely inaccessible for anyone. But for the more complicated elements, you probably do have to put a bit of work in to understand and frame what's going on. So maybe just if I pause there. So I guess what we've tried to do that is, yes, it's long, but it's made up of lots of little different bits, and it's different genres, different styles of books. And then we thought about complicated, and I think where we've got to is, yes, there are bits that are complicated, but not completely, maybe completely inaccessible if you put your work in. But there are also some really easy bits to understand. Maybe a slightly separate question that might tease some of this out. Why do you think Jesus taught in parables? Any thoughts on this? Major reasons.
Present something in a simple story that people will remember.
Yes.
They've then got to work out it's actually teaching.
Yeah.
And he actually didn't want everybody to understand. He wanted only people who came with an open heart to understand. So he made them deliberately a bit obscure.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Yeah, anything else?
The power of narrative.
Explain what you mean, Grant.
Parables. Narrative generally invites the reader in and asks them to sometimes speculate where it's going, what the end is likely to be, and then, of course, often surprise them.
Definitely. I think all of those are true, actually. And I think some other really practical reasons, they're very memorable in a way that laws really aren't. Like, you really, if I said to you, can you remember the highway code? Like, it, you wouldn't remember it. But if I said, can you remember the story of, I don't know, Winnie the Pooh doing something, like, you're more likely to remember like stories than you are something else. The other thing Jesus, I think, does really well with parables is he roots it in things that people then were very used to, whether it was sheep or gone.
There is another reason, I think, and that was if you taught the lesson in parables, they couldn't take him into court and accuse him.
True. Yeah, there's an
Because
opaqueness there.
it sidestepped the issue because he told them the truth, but in a story,
Yeah, I think that's a
which
great,
is.
yeah, great point. Yeah. The other thing I think that actually, Andrew, you referred to is it, Jesus wanted to hide something here, which is a bit odd because I think if you ask people in the street and said, does Jesus just like, how did Jesus teach? Presumably he wants you to know everything he's teaching. Actually, that's not what the Bible says that Jesus wanted to do in some senses. He spoke in parables to partly hide things, which feels a bit counterintuitive when you think about it firstly, but it's clearly something that Jesus wanted people to try and search after the meaning in a parable. And in so doing, to reveal the heart of the listener, which I think is, Graham, your point around drawing people into the parable. For those of you who like interesting talks or books, there's a book written in the last couple of years by a chap called Peter Williams, who's at Tyndale House in Cambridge, and he's written a really interesting book called The Surprising Genius of Jesus. And his point is that actually in the parables, you see the most brilliant example of Jesus as a genius. And his point is actually it's very, very hard to have something incredibly deep and complex presented in a very simple way. You're like very good communicators can condense a really complicated topic into a simple language. It's even harder to then condense that into a story that even a kid could understand. And his point is, take the parable of the lost. Jesus has incredible like depth of allusions back to the Old Testament. When you hear the story, you just think he's telling a nice story. That is incredibly hard to do. And his argument is that Jesus is a genius in the way that you never, like, if you ask people on the street who's a genius, they'd say Einstein or someone else. And he's like, that is genius, that you can this very complicated, dense set of connections to the Old Testament to draw out really complicated lessons, presenting this incredibly simple form is actually a piece of brilliance in itself. But back to this, it's more the more I think that's helpful here is the point Andrew made is that parables were there as a very helpful tool. They were quite nice to listen to, but they had a depth of meaning. And I think that might be helpful when we think about the complexity of the Bible, that maybe there's something in the fact that some bits are a bit more complicated that Jesus wants and God want us to have to spend a bit of work to get into the depth of what they're actually saying. So let's try and bring it all together. So here's some suggested reasons why I think the Bible isn't short and simple. The first is if you just had an instruction manual like the Highway Code, it would be very efficient at conveying information. Like it would tell you stuff that you need to know. But I think it would have some limitations. Not necessarily entirely true in all instances, but you can see what I'm getting at. It would, by necessity, have to be quite prescriptive. Culturally, it might not land in every culture in the same way. I like bullet points because I'm a Westerner, but lots of people don't like bullet points if you've not been trained in that sort of way of thinking. It can sometimes look rude. I think it probably would only appeal to certain people. It would offer limited depth. I think E is important. If you just had a codified list of, say, 10 things, you could kind of learn those 10 things and know everything there is to know really about 10 things quite quickly. The second reason why I suggest the Bible isn't short and simple is if you had from a God a list of 10 things that were just written, Ten Commandments is a good example of this, coming from heaven, that can, that is quite a coercive thing. You must do X, you must do Y, you must do, that is quite a strong piece of communication. So you've got to do these things. And I think in that context, the history of the Jews and the Ten Commandments does tell you that that can tend to a kind of legalism where you're just following instructions. Actually, a more complex book is harder to force fit into there as much as maybe sometimes we'd like to try, if that makes sense. So there's my suggestions as to why God might not have chosen to do a short and simple book, but that still hasn't answered the question, why has he chosen a long and complex book? It kind of does, but it doesn't quite. So this is my reasons why. The first is because the story of God's people is long and God's people are complicated. And so therefore the book reflects the thing that we are. I think that's certainly for me reasonably compelling as to why he might have chosen to do that in part. I think the second is that a diversity of text suits a wider range of needs across time and culture. It does potentially have a wider appeal than if it was just one thing or another thing. This is maybe linked to the parable point. It does seem that God wants people to not just take something at face value and go, yeah, fine, I'll crack on with my life. He wants a level of thought. He wants people to seek out wisdom like it was be like it's gold, as Proverbs says. I think it illustrates the depth of God. God is complex, it would seem to me, and therefore this is from him, and therefore it's probably not a huge surprise. It takes time to understand. Real life is messy and complicated. Take Abraham, David, Boaz and Ruth. The biblical texts, unlike most other religious texts, don't seem to hide from that. And they seem to almost embrace the complexity of the human relationship. And that messiness is definitely there, it seems to me, in the text. Sick, I think it does encourage discussion. If something is incredibly simple, we wouldn't have to talk about it very much. You know, like if it just said the speed limit's 30, like you can have an argument about whether 28 or 29, but you ain't going to be debating for hours on that. Whereas if it's more complex document, you're going to have to get together and then someone says, well, I think it might mean, oh, what do you think? Okay. And then there's a benefit of bringing that document together as a community. And then I think the last point, which may be related to this, is it's not the only method of communication God's given us. He's given us nature. He's given us many things. Most obviously, he's given us Jesus. And in that, we have a very interesting form of communication that's not just a written document. So I'm not sure if they're all true. I think they mostly are. And I'm sure there might be more reasons you can add. But hopefully that's a helpful set of suggestions about why it is the way it is. And maybe just to finish, I do want to distinguish that from the good news about Jesus, which I do think is incredibly simple, actually, as it happens. There's lots of verses that basically say the same things. God's loved us. He sent his son to save us. We're sinners. We need saving. He's going to set up a kingdom. And much of that is not remotely complicated. The simple teaching of the good news of the kingdom of God is exactly that. It's quite short and quite simple. It's the Bible that's long and complex, if that makes sense.